This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. You got me, Kevin Hagland, Corey Majors, the famous Mike Bassick, and the even more famouser Alec Medford. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. How are we doing this morning?
I appreciate that you said that about Alec, because we all agree with you that he has got a level of fame that
it's impressive.
Can't be charted, but it's the way that you said it. More famouser is not appropriate English.
Doesn't it feel appropriate for this show?
Valid. That is valid, especially the way we use words.
All right, so let's go ahead and fire off.
I'm here.
Okay.
Well, Corey got mad, and I agree.
Well, because the Today Show or whatever that was on the TV.
Two women on there talking about stuff, and it was like, let's put on football or basketball or baseball highlights.
This
or
is a sports station. What are we doing watching
how women are?
Yeah. Okay, PJ Washington, I know.
PJ did say some really nice things also.
Man, by the way, at our party, the Fan Christmas party at Martin House in Fort Worth on Saturday, I had multiple people reference me when somebody said something about a woman, and he goes, what would PJ Washington think about that? And I was like, I don't know if that's what he wants associated with him, but I did think that was objectively
hilarious.
What's going to
be great is about, what, 5-10 years from now, and we sit down and recap that and how it all went down is the story that led to it. It's going to change, but it's going to be a great one in the KNC lore.
Now, go ahead and give me that cut number one, because look, the first quarter was terrible. After that, it picked up and the Cowboys were in control most of the day.
First and 10 at the 19. Young rolling to his left. Chased by Parsons. Ooh, he overran him. And Young puts his foot in the ground. Ball goes into the ground at the 15. The ball is fumbled. And the Cowboys have it back at around their own 13-yard line.
I have literally no evidence to back this up, but it feels like every play that ever goes like that ends poorly for my team. When you overrun the quarterback, like, you've clearly got a beat on him. You've destroyed your person. You're going to get the sack, and then you overrun, overpursue, however you want to describe it. It feels like that play almost always ends poorly, but instead, you got probably a better result. Now, I don't know if Micah would have hit him and knocked the ball out either way, but you got a better result out of that, and that set the tone for what was a turnover palooza for the Panthers and Bryce Young.
That turned it all around for the Cowboys offensively too, right?
It did.
Because that was after the Cooper Rush fumble, and from there on, it seemed like they got their S together.
Well,
right?
I think that one, because he had another one, was before the fumble that made it 10-7.
Okay.
One play later. And then, we can dive into that. I kind of thought we were going to lose after that, because that play felt like you were going to make it 17-0 or at least 13-0, and Carolina hadn't done jack-ass on offense.
It felt like the whole season.
yeah.
In one play.
That, like, that's a good point.
It was as this year as you can get with this season is exactly like that. You're going there. You're doing these things right, and then you just shoot yourself in the foot in the biggest place.
He's
good
right.
Good news is you gave the ball back to Spud Webb.
Man, and they convert. But on that one play, converted it. And you know what? I was like 5 to 7 minutes behind. I accidentally fast-forwarded it too much out of the commercial break, and then I just saw the flash up there that said touchdown, and I was like, what the hell? And so, of course, I rewound, hoping somehow, some way, Corey, I realized this is a weird personality tick, that they wouldn't score a touchdown now that I had gone back to rewatch it at normal speed, but they definitely still scored a touchdown because we got confused on what coverage is what. And at that point, I was like, oh, crap.
Yeah, I got thrown off, and I'm going to be very honest, guys. During the game, I went shopping.
What the hell?
I went Christmas shopping during the game.
So did I.
What?
Oh, wow. I rode the Peloton bike. I got bored with about 3 minutes left till halftime. And I was like, let me turn it on. I watch. I was like, let me go get exercise in. Like, I feel really lazy sitting on the couch watching this. And I got in 20 minutes on the Peloton before halftime, and I got on the bike with less than 3 minutes to go till half. That's how long.
And that first quarter flew by, but you're right. The end of that second quarter.
I couldn't believe it. I remember going, crap. I rode the bike for, it was like 20 minutes and 38 seconds. And I got on the bike close to the 2 minute warning.
Okay.
And that was the, like when I was at the store, Kevin, I was doing my thing. I had my earbuds in listening to Brad Sham.
Did you grab some milk? You're like, son of a
bitch.
Well,
it was a grocery. It was Christmas shopping. I did throw a bottle of cologne. Yeah. At a mall. I went to a mall. Yeah.
Was it crowded?
So I went there specifically to go to a specific store that I went to last year to get some stuff for y'all. And that store's closed. So I'm now having to like redo all of the stuff that Fredericks? I wanted to get for y'all. Yeah, Fredericks of Hollywood.
This is not Elf.
So what ended up happening was I was like standing there listening, and I had to take an earbud out for a second so I could communicate with a human. And then it's not typical. You usually do it on Amazon.
Right.
And then whenever I put my earbuds back in, like the score had turned. And it was just like that kind of a tie. It happened so quickly.
Okay. I'm actually glad that all three of y'all said that to a certain extent, because my question was going to be, were you as invested as usual? Because it's true. The Cowboys dominated. I think they dominated over a bad team. Now, it's true. You were an underdog in that game. I think you dominated against a bad team. But I have to admit, it just didn't feel the same, especially when they continue to go back to, you know, if the Cowboys would have beat the Bengals, they could have been 7-7. I was like, no, yeah, I hear you, man.
That part hurts.
But we didn't, Greg Olsen. And and so you're 6-8, and that's great. You won the game and all that good stuff. But I have to admit, and I wonder if other Cowboys fans are like this, I wasn't as invested going through it. Because, like, if you lost, better draft pick. If you won, I mean, I'm glad you won, but it makes no difference.
I got home just after halftime. So I got home, and when I turned on the TV, I turned it on to Red Zone, and I put the Cowboys on the laptop. And then I wrapped some presents. So, Kevin, my interest level, not wrapped like that, not like that. My interest level was down all weekend going into it, just because it's been a brutal season already.
Yes.
I didn't think I was going to watch great football with Carolina on the field.
I didn't know what time the game started at.
Oh, no.
So when we do our thing and I'm like, hey, pregame starts at 9, kickoff.
Okay. I'm sorry. That's the interest I have in the Cowboys as this season has progressed. I mean, I obviously figured it out at 10:30 in the morning. I was like, let me click on the television because I'm like, this feels like a noon start. This Cowboys
and it's not the number one game.
It feels like noon. This and so, like, you know, you hit the YouTube and you hit live, and I went down and saw on channel 4, you know, it's like, all right, game's at noon. I'm like, okay, so the game's at noon.
I mean, and you got the requisite. I mean, I like Greg Olsen a lot, but you got the...
I think he is very good.
You got the not number one crew for what felt like a not number one game. You could look in the stands, and your fans were like, yeah, either way.
That was amazing to me. I know this is maybe NFL, but also Cowboys. I have on YouTube, I actually went to the dual channel so I could watch Kansas City, Cleveland, and Dallas, Carolina at the same time. And both stadiums were at best, and I mean at best, 70% full. And I was like, wow, I cannot. I mean, I guess a Cowboy game, they're playing in Carolina. I can't remember. Did they play in Carolina last year? We played the little guy last year too, right? Who's we played Bryce Young last year, right? We played the little guy.
Okay. Yeah, sounds good.
And so I think, I'm not 100% sure. Maybe it was just, but I was like, wow, I know there's a lot of Cowboy fans in that area.
Yeah.
And they're just like, I don't care to go. And then obviously Panther fans, few and far between for a while now. And then Cleveland gets the back-to-back Super Bowl champs. Patrick Mahomes is healthy going into that game, and there was 30% empty seats in that building. And by the time you got 10 minutes left in both games, at best, both stadiums were 50% full, and that's at best.
Mm. Yeah, that was where my interest level was for the day, Kevin.
Okay.
I went back and perused through the game, watched the big points of it, but was just like, I'm seeing what I expected from this Cowboys team against this team, right? Like, there was nothing that I didn't expect from the Cowboys against Carolina.
Will it change at all? My guess is probably not really, but will it change at all Sunday night? You're going to play a better Tampa team, or in the last game of the season, if you could potentially knock out the Commanders. I realize once the Saints couldn't convert on their 2-point conversion, that felt unlikely, but if for some reason you could knock the Commanders out, do you think that will stoke more interest, or do you think you're like, hey, our team's not making the playoffs either way, so eh.
You're watching, I'll tell you this, I get a chance to watch Mike Evans, and that's one of those dudes right there that I'm going to take interest in for the remainder of his career. Mike said it multiple times, that is a dude right there that you're just like, has he gone underappreciated most of his career?
Sure.
And he has. So I will continue to do that. And Kevin, as long as we got 1% chance, as long as there's 1% chance and we keep starting Cooper Rush,
feels high.
Then it feels like everything that we're trying to pursue here is to get back to that Super Bowl. So I think that's what it is, Kevin, is it might be a late run, a late push. It might be difficult to get past, I don't know, the Seahawks or whoever else, the Commanders. It might be difficult.
I don't know. I saw that Sunday night game. It might not be too hard to get past the Seahawks.
We could do it, though.
All right. Maybe. This is apparently, you guys are in the majority. It really feels like from the 817. Yeah, my family kicked me out of the YouTube TV because so many people were using it around the beginning of the second quarter. I didn't care to get back on in the game. I took my sons to go see Gladiator 2 and skip the Cowboys game. It was great. Yeah, shopping, gym, and lunch during the Cowboys game so then I could be ready for the two big-time games at 325. And make no mistake about it. Like, the focus of the NFL world was on those two games at 325. No, I don't think any of the focus on the like entire NFL world was on this Dallas Carolina game, but you do see like a lot of people are like, hey, they won, that's cool. But like, I wasn't, yeah. I wasn't there. I wasn't really locked in for this game.
Were you? You were?
Mingo showed them though, huh? They made a mistake trading Mingo away from that team.
So you know what I thought at one point, Mike, in our group text, you were like, we really should put, I believe what you said was, we really should put Bingo in the game.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was like, I wanted to text you back, but I was behind. And I was like, but Mike, he is in the game.
Oh.
Like, that was the concerning part. There are times when he is in the game and you just don't know he's there. That he's in the game because they don't even target him. And
that was once Mozzie Smith.
Yeah, man. Oh.
And do you feel right now, though, that Mozzie Smith is a better player than you thought he was at the beginning of the season?
At the beginning of the season, for sure. Up to where you want him to be, still not really close. But he did come, he was adjacent to a huge play. And I was like, oh, hey, Mozzie Smith was right there. Like, he might have been able to make that play.
One play where he threw somebody on the ground that was nice. That was a nice play to see. Osa just continuing to
be. Yeah, he was phenomenal.
Force on the field. And that's sad because the Cowboys won't end up paying him either. So that's a sad thing to move on from. But yeah, there were some things that did capture your eye for sure about this game.
Yeah, no, that's fair. But
everything comes with a caveat. That's the only.
You played a crap team.
Yeah, that's the thing that stinks about it is while you're going through it and you're like, oh, you kind of got excited against the Bengals, knowing, hey, this I know what that offense is.
Yeah.
And I know what our defense did to them to slow them just a little bit. But the offense really couldn't keep up with it either. And then there was a play at the end of the game that turned that around. So you're like, oh, man, is there a level of excitement to go? I think this was my letdown week, Kevin. Was after that kind of a loss, it was the, okay. You know, that deflated me enough.
We wondered if the Cowboys are going to quit. I saw that text again and again and again. Are the Cowboys going to show up? Are they going to quit? Are they going to this, that, the other? I just, going back a couple weeks, I had the Cowboys at 6 wins. I thought they would beat the Panthers and the Giants because those teams are not good. And then they would win one other rando game that we didn't expect. And that ended up being the Commanders game. And so here they are at 6 wins.
With plenty of time left in the season.
Kid Cowboy 66 on YouTube says, yes, Mike, Mingo did a great job blocking 160 yards rushing. Maybe he did. I don't know.
Nobody's trading their fourth round pick for a blocking wide receiver. Like, that's not, but I get it. He's under contract for 2 more years.
I wonder, this is where I don't know, because I don't know Kid Cowboy 66. I don't know if he's being sarcastic or he's like, no, he did a great job blocking. And maybe he did. I don't know.
That is possible. I have to admit,
I don't know.
I've not been locked in on our wide receivers blocking skills.
Blocking's important in this game. Hey, it's since the blocking has gotten better at the wide receiver position. That is a reality. And that is one of the things that the Cowboys said they wanted out of Mingo, was that he's a more physical blocker. Since that's happened, Rico Dowdle's been a better runner. So continue blocking.
Kid Cowboy said real. He's being for real.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, and that's fine, but that's not what you traded a fourth round pick for, is so you could beef up the blocking on your wide receiver.
Yeah,
core.
It is. If you want to be a run first team.
No, it's not.
I want to be a run first team now, Kevin. I want to run the damn ball.
Then why would you trade for a running back?
Because I have one. He's doing great. He had 140 some yards.
But you don't have another running back because they don't want to play Deuce Vaughn. And they only put Ezekiel Elliott in the game, and they're like, this game's
over. I only need one.
Okay, great.
And plus, hey, when I have Zeke,
are you saying Zeke's the human cigar?
He's
a little bit.
And he can block, man.
A little bit.
He has
a little bit.
A power.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's talk about the Mavs-Warrior shootout and how Dallas won the day. Next on The Fan.
Catch and shoot on the advance pass, Klay Thompson! Oh, that has to feel good for Klay Thompson!
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. The Mavs get a huge win over Golden State on the road. I do have a question about turnovers in just a minute, but I will tell you this. Scoring 81 points in the first half is, like, obviously unfreaking believable. Luka in the first half having a great game for any human with 28, 8, and 9 is amazing. But to me, the fact that you won this game, let alone won it by 10 points, against a Golden State team that shot 50% from three and made 27 three-pointers is mind-boggling.
The Mavericks are a great team.
Yeah, they are.
They got off to a horrible start at 5-7. They're 17-9 now, and watching them for, I don't know, I guess we're getting close to a month now, has just been spectacular because Luka last night showed why he is the best offensive player in the world in basketball. And it's really not close when he gets into this zone. When he gets into what he was last night, there's nobody close in the NBA offensively. I get you start adding extra things into it, and that's where Jokic takes over. That's where you could argue Giannis and stuff like that. But offensively, nobody can compete with him when he is what he is last night.
I get that. Yeah.
And then you just have so many different guys who can step up. You just mentioned Klay Thompson. And I wonder this, like, does he need, and this is fine with me because the playoffs are the juice. Does he need juice on the game to then go to that place where you're like, that's Klay Thompson?
I mean, historically, he has risen to that occasion.
That's
the history on Klay, is that whenever these games come up, he's there for it.
Look, and this is one of the things I will say that we talked about before the year is, don't be totally sold one way or another on Klay Thompson in the regular season when what he's really here for is the playoffs. Like, I get it. If he can do things like this and help the Mavericks get a top two seed in the West, and they're still like a game out of that, then that's great. But he's here for the playoffs. He's here for, as Corey just referenced, the big stage moments.
Yeah, I mean, because when you were in need of big three-pointers last year to answer back against Boston, there wasn't really anybody for it. And, like, there was Timmy who was like, I will take the shot.
Sure.
But there wasn't anybody that you trusted consistently, and they're going to continue to trust Clay in these big moments. Man, hell, he closed that game out last night. The game,
Luka was finding him too. Like, Luka searched him out purposefully. Which was a great job.
Yeah. Can I just say, there's nothing better, because I know how good Luka is offensively. There's nothing better than when Luka is in his passing world, and he's like, I know if I give it to him or him, we're good.
It's a wide open shot, and I'm trusting that guy to make it.
Yep.
And I think when that guy gets the ball, he knows that too. It's the Jason Kidd. I had already made the decision that you were making that shot, Brian Scalabrine. That's why I'm mad that you didn't take the shot. But that, like, last night, throughout the night, I was like, okay, got a 10-point lead. Everything's good. But it never felt like you had complete control of the game. So I felt like at some point a barrage of threes from Steph could happen, and then you were in this situation where you were going to be even tighter down the stretch. But Clay at the end hitting big threes, getting free throws at the end of the game was what was awesome about it.
I don't know if our minds will ever go to this because we're too old. What you just said, Corey, is our brains watching. I'm assuming you watched 90s basketball and Dirk Nowitzki era.
Yeah.
You need to be up by 25 or more going into the fourth quarter to be secure of a win. Because there were 95 three-pointers taken in this game, because that's not the average, but when both teams are shooting that percentage, it gets scary, is literally being up by 20 points to begin the fourth quarter is now like 20 years ago when Dirk was entering his prime or in his prime in 04. That would be like being up by 10 points going into the fourth quarter. So literally at this point, I think being up 20 with 12 minutes to play would be like playing the Sacramento Kings in 04 with Bibby and Peja and Weber and Divac. Like, we're up by 10. I think we're going to win, but this is very comebackable from a team like Sacramento back in the day, from Golden State. Like, I'm trying to get my brain around being up by 20, especially in the first half, means absolutely nothing in today's game. Being up by 20 going into the fourth quarter, you feel good about it, but it feels like the game will get down to 5 points at some point in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you saw, but the Mavericks still won, and I will tell you this again, even this didn't end up being a tight game at the very end. You have seen in the last 3 weeks, maybe 2.5 weeks, a significantly better closing out team with this Dallas Mavericks. Significantly better. And when you talked about that run of getting to 5-7, that was a big part of the issue, is they cannot close out games to save their life.
You know something else I saw last night, Mike? There was a moment when PJ and Derek Lively did the two-man game, and PJ starts going to the basket, two guys follow, he dishes to Lively. Lively now has three people on him, and Lively's near the basket and passes the ball out to Luka for a three. And there was another moment where I saw Lively get a pass. He had a ball underneath, and he went to pass it out. It got taken. And you know, I was like, all right. A lot of times you just see the big man has the ball. He just goes to the basket. Doesn't even look to pass. But Derek Lively dishes it out to Luka for a three, because Luka's standing wide open, of course, because everything's in the two-man game. When you have a center that can do that kind of thing for your star, too, that's something special that we're going to be able to take into the playoffs. They're working on that.
Yeah, Derek Lively has... I've been surprised at how good of a passer he's been out of Duke. Like, I feel like because the ball went so much... I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the white dude who was there that was the big center with him, Lively. He got drafted late first round, I believe. He stayed one more year.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember, sorry.
But do you know who I'm talking about, right? He was the offensive weapon, so Lively was kind of... So he didn't touch the ball as much in Duke's system, but since Derek Lively's gotten here, you've seen him. He's not a bad passer, and he keeps improving on it. And the thing is now Nico
Dowdle
Harrison and Jason Kidd, with the elimination of Mark Cuban, has said, all right, we don't want one guy to handle the ball and four guys who look like Nimrods to have to dribble and pass. That's here. And nothing against, like, Dorian Finney-Smith, nice player in the NBA, can't dribble and pass. Maxie can't dribble and pass. Dwight Powell can't dribble and pass. And Mark Cuban thought it would be good if you had four other guys on the court who can't dribble and pass, because then it would almost demand and force Luka to have the ball 100% of the time.
The way Donnie told us was it cleared space for Luka.
Yeah, and now, to your point, PJ Washington, Derek Lively, Luka Doncic. Obviously, you have Kyrie. Spencer Dinwiddie didn't have that good of a game if you look in the box score, but you're so deep. You didn't have Najee Marshall. Maxey, he's always out. But Quentin Grimes stepped up and had a really nice, solid performance off of the bench with 14 points. So Quentin Grimes, he can dribble and pass a basketball. It doesn't look like it's the first time he's ever had to dribble and pass. And so I think Nico's done a great job that when a guy like PJ Washington gets the ball, it's like, oh God, shoot it or get rid of it because you can't dribble and pass. And so a lot of times now, the Mavericks usually will have three or four guys on the court at all times who can dribble and pass a basketball.
And that's a nice thing to have, man.
And it started to, probably because of that, you saw a move in the right direction yesterday. Because this has been something, and even Luka talked about this, is the jump up in turnovers since he came back. Because you've turned the ball over too many times. So Dallas,
when you're shooting 51% from
then
three.
Then it doesn't. I mean,
it covers it up.
It's so weird because you're right, but at halftime, you scored 81 points, but the other team had hit 18 three-pointers. Yeah. You're like, well, what the hell am I supposed to do about that?
It was a fast-paced game.
But the Mavericks were at 14.4 turnovers per game, which I'm not saying that's terrible by any means. But since Doncic came back from his wrist injury prior to this game, they had jumped up to 18 per game, which is second worst in the league. And that's one of the things that Luka, and I appreciate this very much, he stepped right out and he said, sloppy passes by me. You got to take care of the ball. And he said, unacceptable.
I agree with what he's saying, but here's where I'm happy about this. He's playing an uncomfortable style that he's never played in his life. So he sat and watched I don't think he had an injury at all. I think that he had a lack of, I don't really care to play basketball. And I think Jason Kidd did a great job of mentally reading him and going, hey, don't go on this road trip. Get yourself mentally right. We can't win with you being this disengaged. And I'm sure he put it in different terms than I am, but I'm just making it clear on what I think happened. And I think that Luka was like, okay, I do need this. And he saw that team then roll off win after win after win. How were they playing? They were playing at a pace that Luka does not like playing at. So as he's come back, I give Luka a lot of credit. He said, I saw this team go, I think it was 4-1, I think
that is correct.
And said, you know what? This team plays better team-wise at Kyrie's pace, at PJ Washington's pace, at these guys' pace. I am going to try my best to play at this pace. So at times I think Luka gets uncomfortable and he makes mistakes. But I'm okay because he's trying to grow with his team. And so a lot of them Kevin Love passes, where he's trying to throw the ball 50 or 60 feet to advance the ball quickly. Those seem to be turnovers. I don't know. I'm going to guess 1 out of 4 of those passes.
Okay.
So 25% of the time, as he's trying to advance the ball quickly, instead, what would he do in his heart the way he plays the game? Give me the ball. I'm going to let all 9 guys on the court besides me go up the court, and I'm going to walk the ball up.
And I'm going to break it down granularly and then build it back up from
and
there.
And he knows he can do that. He's the best in the league at doing that. And you'll see it during the game. He still does that. But he sees that off of a defensive rebound, you can see him wanting to play an uncomfortable style to him because he knows it's the best style for his team. And I think he's going to keep getting better at
it.
And he's committed to doing something that he's uncomfortable at.
One big part of this stretch, not only are you 12-2 in your last 14, but look at the schedule ahead. And not only do you have more home games, and that's great, but you don't have to play again until Thursday.
Heck yeah, get some rest on those old legs.
I see, and rest... Sure.
For that 25-year-old and 20-year-old.
Talking about like Kyrie. But and
also practice time. You can get some practice time in there. And then
Gafford's body.
The Mavericks don't go on the
get
road
your
again.
COVID shots or whatever's happening to these illness guys.
It could just be regular illness, but you're right. They don't go on the road again for another 11 days. So if you're looking at the Mavericks, you're coming off a win after, you know, getting beaten pretty good by Oklahoma City. You don't have to go and play again for 4 more days. You don't have to go again on the road for 11 more days. And so you've got some time at home. You've got some time to practice. You've got some time to continue to get better. And this is a team that's been rolling.
I'm with you. And over these last about 12 games, you're getting close to a month of play. You're seeing a true championship contender. I know that we're about to go into baseball, but talking about football, whether you watch Detroit or Buffalo, or you watched Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, you're watching teams that you think, like, I think they're true contenders. Let me watch these games. And when you've watched the Mavericks now for about a month, you're like, okay, they're a true championship contender. I can see that they can win the championship and do it without, like, oh, they just got lucky. Sure. They are that good. Now, we'll see if it continues throughout the season. Well, you got to hope that you're super healthy going into the playoffs. But this is an outstanding team, and they're kind of doing it while guys are missing games. This has not been a healthy – the 10-2 record is not a healthy team at 10-2.
And there is a divide between the top four and the rest of the West. But there's no way in hell I thought for sure Oklahoma City and Dallas would be in there. I did not think that Memphis and Houston would be the other two teams in there. So while you create a little bit of separation between four and the rest of – well, Oklahoma City's created separation too. But four and
Memphis
the rest
is a
of
weird
the West.
Team, dude.
Yeah.
I'm serious. Like,
it's a weird team.
Memphis, because I don't think of them as a contender, but they're always right there, and they're going to be a tough out in the playoffs.
As long as Ja's healthy, they're always great. When Ja missed last year, they were not a good team. So, you know, I don't mind playing them in the playoffs. I think that you're better. I think you're better than every team than Oklahoma City. That's the only team where I'm like, hey, it's going to be a battle against Denver in the playoffs, a battle against Golden State in the playoffs. I think you'd come out on top. It's Oklahoma City where I'm like, coin flip it, man. You know, a break here, a break there in a series, and you're going the NBA Finals, or you're not going the NBA Finals because a break or something didn't go your way.
And the guy you were looking for was Kyle Filipowski. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Passer.
Well, everything's calmed down. What are the Rangers going to do during this Christmas break next?
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan right now. It's time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Passer.
Well, I was looking at MLB trade rumors, and not a ton went on. I know that we didn't really cover Devin Williams getting traded to the Yankees, but a very good closer.
Yep.
A guy who has one more year that Milwaukee knew they were not going to pay the the lefty in Houston that actually used to be in Milwaukee. I'm doing horrible with names today.
That's okay. Because I was actually going to ask, do you like the swap of sending out Cortez and now you're getting what feels like an upgrade? Yes?
I think so, because they're looking at Gerrit Cole being healthy. They just had Luis Hill, who kind of came back from injury. Still, I think he made his debut in 21 or 22, but was considered a rookie this year because he didn't pitch in enough games and innings that he was a rookie this year. But if you kind of look at where the Yankees are at, and they sign Max Fried, correct?
Yes.
I'm making sure my brain is working well. Is you start looking at their rotation and it's like, hey, this is pretty sound. We have depth. In fact, you could compare it a little bit to the Texas Rangers. Now, what Gerrit Cole did is he never got majorly hurt and he came back and pitched quite a bit of the season last year. Jacob DeGrom did not, but your Gerrit Cole and Jacob DeGrom are on that same tier when they're both healthy, Cy Young candidates. And you start looking at the Rangers' depth in their rotation, the way the Yankees probably looked at their depth and go, you know what? Our bullpen was not very good last year. Now, for the Rangers, their bullpen was great for the eighth and ninth inning with Robertson and Yates. Unfortunately, they're just both free agents. So you could see the Rangers having to do something like that, is that they might have to trade a starting pitcher. We've brought up John Gray. I really like John Gray. I think he's a really nice number three, number four starting pitcher in a rotation. But when you start going down the list of, now you have Eovaldi back and DeGrom and Malley and Bradford and Rocker and Dunning and Leiter. You're like, wait, and I haven't even mentioned Graham. I'm like, oh, we have some depth here. You're going to need all of those guys if you don't trade them. They're all going to make starts this year most likely for you, unless Leiter just sticks in the pen the whole time. But you start looking at it and go, but if we can't sign Kirby Yates back, we might have to do a trade where we trade a guy like John Gray. I'm not suggesting this at all. But you might have to trade a Cody Bradford to then, I don't think they will. Don't, I want to make this clear. I don't think they will at all. But sometimes if you want a manual Clause A,
he's still my heart.
Like, how would you guys feel if you got a manual Clause A? I know he stunk in the playoffs, to be honest.
I would still be, I
think he had a 0.6 ERA for the regular season.
I'd be pretty okay with it.
But you are going to have to trade quite a bit to get him if you want him. So, anyways, I think the Rangers are going to be concentrating. I'm kind of repeating myself, but I think they're going to be concentrating on bullpen. It'll just be interesting here. Today's the 16th of December.
That's correct.
Through pretty much January 1st. How active will the Rangers be? It almost looks like on MLB Trade Rumors, everybody's trying to sign their kind of minor league free agents right now and in invitations to major league camp. That kind of seems to be the direction of organizations right now, is like, let's get guys that we think could make the team. They're not going to be on the 40-man. We're inviting them to spring training, and let's see if they can surprise us and be better than maybe most teams think and push their way onto a 26-man roster. But I found this article on ESPN.com, and I thought this was interesting. It's an MLB manager's survey, and it's from ESPN. And they asked some questions, which I think are good questions. And a couple of older managers that we both love, Ron Washington and Bruce Bochy, answered these questions. And there's other people that answer the questions.
I love both of them.
I found that these were interesting answers. It says, if it was your call, what would MLB's next major rule change be? Ron Washington, give the pitchers all the time they need to make pitches. Now I'm going to stop right there. Please don't.
Yeah.
Because I love that the game is now pretty much a 2-hour and 40-minute game.
Yep. Yeah.
And the I will say the main reason, because I think there's other reasons, but the main reason is that pitch clock. The pitch clock has now gotten the game back to when Ron Washington was playing with my dad on the Minnesota Twins. Those games used to be probably 2 hours and 15 minutes, two hours and 20 minutes.
Pitching coaches back then were like, hey, get a rhythm.
Yeah, and
get
you were pitching, and the hitters were trying to put the ball in play. They're trying to get base hits, but they weren't trying to, let's say, draw walks. Now you have a lot of people that are like, draw walks, wait for your extra base hit pitch, and then swing out of your rear end to hit that extra base pitch that they've thrown. But if they're not throwing you pitches that you can hit doubles and homers on, let's just not swing and see if we can draw a walk, because singles are so crappy. For instance, like Luis Arraez once again is on the trade block.
Yeah, nobody wants him. Nobody wants
Tony Gwynn. Nobody wants Wade Boggs. Nobody wants Rod Carew. Those are, in today's game, those are considered not very valuable players. They're major league players. They're kind of all-stars, but most teams do not value those type of players. So after he says, let the pitchers have all the time they need to make pitches, he says, I'd also like to get rid of that three times throwing over to first base junk.
Is it only two?
It's only two, Ron.
Okay.
And so it says, experienced pitchers can handle the pitch clock after they see what's got to be done. But I think it just affects the younger pitchers. And here's my issue with that, Ron, and I love you. It's the older pitchers who seem to have the biggest problem with the pitch clock that it's been introduced into the game, because
Derek hates it.
Yeah. The whole minor leagues, they pitch without a pitch clock. Their big league career, at least for the first half of their career, they pitch without a pitch clock. And then you add something that they've never done in their life, not in high school, not in college, not in the minor leagues, not in the major leagues. The younger guys had a pitch clock in the minor leagues their whole career. Like, it doesn't affect a Cody Bradford. He's actually never thrown a professional pitch without a pitch clock being on him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's, I don't, so I love you, Ron, but it was a weird, I just thought, let me read this, because there's a couple things here that just don't make a lot of sense to me. The three-time pickover is two-time pickover. I guess you could say the third time, you can throw a third time. It's just a balk if you don't pick the guy off.
Maybe that's how much he doesn't care for it. He didn't even try to learn it.
Bruce Bochy. Like, no.
Be better and I'll learn
I love name. You, Bruce. He kind of Jerry Jones this one here.
Uh-oh.
So it says, if it was your call, what would MLB's next major rule change be? Bruce Bochy's answer, just like us, me as a manager or players, we're always looking to get better. So you always are looking for ways you can make the game better. Tinkering a little bit is fine, but you have to draw a line somewhere. I don't think he answered the question on what would you change.
That felt just like both Jerry and Steven said the same thing about whether it was the Toy Story thing or the Simpsons thing. They go, hey, fun things are fun, but if they're too fun, Then it gets absurd. And you're like, okay, so that could have just been about anything.
I kind of get what he's saying, though. He's saying, I don't want to just change the sport just to change it. If we're going to actually change it, it needs to have a purpose to make the game better. He didn't offer any suggestions on what to do. He was just saying, I'll tell you whether or not it's good whenever it happens.
I will say this.
And I trust him.
That's fair.
Dave Martinez, I'll just read you what he said. He's the Washington Nationals manager, just because I agreed with him on this first statement. He says, It definitely won't be the golden at bat. And that's where I'm at, too. I think baseball would be totally and completely ruined if they did that.
Because that's something for, like, it would catch the attention of the people, at least initially. But most everyone in the sport would probably be like, this is stupid.
Yeah, because the people that are going to stick with a game for 2.5 hours, let's say, or at least casually watch for the first, let's say, 2 hours, and then you get down to the 7th, 8th, 9th inning, the casual fan didn't want, like, he's just, like, I guess you can see the highlight of, here's the highlight of Shohei getting the free at bat, but they're not going to watch the game.
Yeah.
So you're not really going to bring more people into, hey, you want to watch the first 7 or 8 innings where it's going to be the way baseball always was. And then in the 8th and 9th inning, if you stick around for the 2 hours that you never wanted to stick around for, you think you'll stick around for this random at bat somebody's going to have?
Probably not.
I thought the next question, I'll just answer or give you Terry Francona's answers. How do you feel about MLB's current expanded playoff format after seeing it for multiple seasons? And Terry Francona, who's been around for a long time, just says, I wish the one thing that would change is you're seeing too many bullpen games in the playoffs. And he talks about the off days that you have. And he's like, it's really, baseball is built more where you can't use, let's just use Kirby Yates. I know he didn't pitch for us in the playoffs this year because he didn't make it. But you shouldn't be able to use Kirby Yates in 5 out of the 7 games in the playoffs, and then you're okay with doing it again because you have 2 games off day, 3 games off day, 2 games. Or you get to a 5-game series, it's 2 games off day, 2 games off day,
What would you think?
Can throw them 5 out of 5 games if you want, and you're not really killing them.
What would you think about the concept of max of 1 off day in a playoff series?
I like that a lot.
Okay.
It just gets tough if New York's playing L.A.,
yeah,
that's
I hear you.
The travel of West Coast versus East Coast. It gets very tough making that travel, but it would try to eliminate. Like, we can't throw him. We've thrown him 3 days in a row. He cannot throw.
Well,
and there's
make
no
him
such
travel
thing.
In buses then.
There's no such
much
thing.
They like it then.
Okay, that would be like 4 days off. Right?
Really thought he was about to say there's no such thing as a bus. And I was like, no, there definitely is.
Last one. This is a fun article on ESPN.com. Maybe I'll get to more of it tomorrow. Which opposing hitter do you least want to face with the game on the line? I'd love for y'all's answer right here. All major league
I still
hitters,
think it's Shohei. I do.
Least want to face with the game on the line. Seager. I still think if Corey Seager's
I think
the
he's
play,
up there.
I'm scared to pitch. I don't want to pitch to him at all.
Yeah.
If I need to win the game, I'm saying go take first, buddy.
I'll tell you a person who I was thinking of, and I don't think there's a wrong answer here. I don't think he has a. I'd go with Juan Soto.
Yeah.
That dude has a great eye. He's a base hit hitter. He can hit the homer. We saw that to beat Cleveland. So I think that there's a lot. I don't think there's a lot of guys to choose from, but Hyde for the Orioles said there's so many. Judge, Betts, Alvarez, wrap them all up. I don't want to face any of them. Ron Washington said Mookie Betts.
Oh, man, Betts.
He's bust my ass many times, was Ron Washington's quote.
You could have said, guess who said that. And I feel like I would have gotten that.
Rocco Baldelli said Aaron Judge. So it's kind of, I think there's probably a group of 5 or 6. Now, nobody said Seager, but we saw Seager in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You do not want to face Seager with the game on the line.
And this probably is not in the questionnaire, but the biggest name that you actually do want to face with the game on the line, that's got to be Aaron Judge, right? Just because of all the struggles he's had in the playoffs.
You know, I mean, I would rather face, I don't know, who's the guy who got the tattoo on his butt, or at least they were making fun of
Austin
him.
Hedges?
Yeah. I said Austin Hedges, not a big name. No.
Oh, man,
what about
Freddie Freeman? Does he go, or are you just like, you know what, first inning, I don't want to face him in the World Series.
You know what, I do want to bring up that World Series ball, what it sold for at one point. We'll get to that in a little bit. Okay, well, we have to go to break. I feel like you know that. Coming up next, let's talk with our Dallas Cowboys insider, Mickey Spagnuolo. Let's talk about those stars as well next on The Fan.